Welcome to the SPS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by the Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from a conference room in Central Office, bringing you the latest news in Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. I am your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed, my personal website, beardedtechedguy.com, and of course, the Digital Learning page on my SPS. I'm excited to be bringing you the next level here, level 4 in our Power Up Your Learning journey that we've been on. But before I do that, I want to make sure that you are all caught up on all the announcements around the district. If you did not see it in your emails, Springfield teachers, you got the school year calendar for next year. There's also an invite for input on the search for the next superintendent. And Springfield just recently started a new partnership with AIC to help you further your education. Check all those announcements out on the My SPS site. On the blog level here, on the digital learning page, we are talking about game-based learning. Now, I know that this whole series is all about Power Up Your Learning, but I do have a starting article out there on the blog called Game-Based Learning, and I thought it was one of my favorites to write because I got to talk about Dungeons & Dragons, and Mario, and a whole bunch of other things, and how it all kind of connects together. So go and check that out. It's on the blog, either on my website or on the digital learning page. Over the next few weeks, we're going to hit these levels pretty rapidly. And I also do have a fun interview with a couple of pre-KK teachers from Montessori School coming up too. So be on the lookout for all of those things. So let's go ahead and jump into level 4, their turn, students as game masters. Hopefully you've picked up the book. There's a link in the show notes to Amazon if you are still not following along in the book, but just listening to me. The book is a really great resource. I encourage you to check it out. I love mine. I also got mine at ISTE, so I got it signed by the authors, so that's kind of pretty cool. So level 4, their turn, students as game masters. The overarching purpose of this section is how can we empower students to grow as learners while designing games? And by the end of this level, the ideas that I'm hoping that you'll take away from this is that you'll be able to formulate a clear purpose for student game design. You'll be able to apply the framework for student game designers and assess the impact of audience in game design. So those are some big high-level things that we're going to try to hit as we talk today. So in previous levels, the book looked at how going from your role as the content expert, which as a classroom teacher you are, to being able to design games in a way that empowers students to take ownership of their learning. However, the book points out that we're not the only game designers in the room. Students also have that same ability, as a lot of time the work that we do with project-based learning is to empower the students to become their own game masters, to become their own agents of learning. And as a teacher, you want to give them the ability to actually do that. And sometimes that means building them up and taking a slow pace at going from never designing games before to becoming a game master. So Jacob Aringo, a STEM teacher that we talked about in an earlier level, one of the projects he did with his students to help them understand this whole process was use a thing called Kane's Arcade. Now, Kane's Arcade movement is based on a documentary about a 9-year-old boy who built an entire arcade out of cardboard in his dad's used auto parts store. How cool is that? And as he was working with his students, going and designing these cardboard arcades, the students then learned about the elements of game design. And as the course progressed, Jacob himself started to feel like he was no longer the teacher and that the students were actually able to create and code their own games. So that's where this whole chapter is leading to. And again, I'll leave links to Jacob Aringo in the show notes, along with Kane's Arcade. Really cool sites if you haven't seen it before. Something that if I were a classroom teacher still, I would definitely be trying to figure out how to incorporate into the curriculum that we have here in Springfield. So the nice thing about this book is that it is not just a book of high and mighty, these are things that we think you should be doing in the classroom. They actually give you practical steps to do that, and how to be able to allow game design for your students is one of those things that they practically allow. And so with this, one of the pop-outs that they have is all about project management. When you are empowering your students to be game designers, you're actually giving them the ability to be project planners too. That's a great skill, and one that if you were to go on LinkedIn right now and type in project manager, you'd find hundreds of jobs for. So it's something that, even though it's not game-based job, the idea of a project manager, students can learn a lot from doing some of the stuff we're talking about today and being able to apply it for a career later on that can be in all sorts of fields. So game design can be individual or collaborative. For the most part, if we look at any game designers, there's one person might have the idea, but then it's a lot of people coming together to make it happen. And then also with project management, you also want to think about the whole idea of backwards design. Students have to lay out their plan and when they plan on hitting goals to be done in time. And then there's also with project management, making sure that students are getting feedback and making sure iteration is a part of that. So really cool that you can actually connect like a regular career outside of education and outside of gaming through gaming. It's pretty neat. So as I said, they give you practical tips to get started and help students become the game masters. The first is objective. So just like us as teachers, we have objectives every day for our classroom. I know for me, I wrote them down on my board every day. Sometimes they were the same and I didn't have to change them, but I had this special section of my board, which used to be a chalkboard that I put like that whole whiteboard laminate paper up on. And that particular spot was always where my objectives were, so that when any student is asked by a principal or someone coming in to observe me what the objectives of the class were, the students were able to look, point, and repeat. But we need students to be able to do more than just repeat what the objective is. They need to know what they're looking for. They need to know what they're trying to share with their audience. And they need to be able to communicate that through the games when the students are working. So a couple of the questions that they prompt in the book that I really liked, it's on page 48 if you are following along, is that will the student demonstrate knowledge of content or academic standard through the design of the game? So is there a specific standard that's being addressed, or is there a demonstration of that content knowledge that is happening? So again, what I love about this is that it is agnostic to the subject that you are in. This could be for math, this could be for reading, this could be for gym, it could be for any subject. Really neat. Another question that they want you to think about is, will the audience that engages in the game have opportunities to learn about the content through the game? Now this goes back to the what type of game is it idea. Like Oregon Trail, we learn a little bit about what life was like on the Oregon Trail, but we don't get a ton of history with it. Now, when I was in fifth grade, we had this really cool unit of Greek and Roman mythology, where throughout the gameplay that was, we learned a lot about their history and everything with it. So that one would be more of a content learning through the game. And then the last question under the objective is, does the game accomplish a higher purpose or deeper meaning? Is it connected to any sort of issues that are local or global? What is the purpose of the game? That is the big important question. What is the purpose? And that's what your objective is when you're working with students. So after the objective, it comes the design. And I think one thing that's important to remember with design is that it is not a one size fits all type thing. As a lot of times in education, you get one curriculum and then you have a couple of ways to modify it, but it's supposed to work for everybody. And that's not really game design. That's not really great classroom design either. So with design, you want to identify the elements that you have for game design, and you can offer them the ability to choose in how they deliver their game. So how much time do you have to allot for this game design process? Is it a couple weeks? Is it a month? Will they have time to follow like Jacob's Classroom and build a cardboard arcade? Is it just a traditional board game? Is it a coded game? And then help them discuss everything that makes it engaging. Like, think of the board game life. There's a lot of different engagement things happening in it that you have to follow along with. And give them, like I said, choice when it comes to their design. The idea that you could go cardboard to and no tech to fully tech really depends upon the students and their creation and delivery. And then make sure that you're offering and giving them the ability to kind of pick and choose what type of integrations they are looking for with their game that they can play. There's so many ways to design games. My kids design board games all the time, or card games all the time. So after design, the next thing to really think about is challenge. And this is the part where you really get the students thinking about what's the overarching purpose of the game. Purpose with your game that they're creating and being the game master of will help them with their overall game design. One of the things that really helps with making sure that students have a clear idea for their game and what the challenges are is to think about the audience that it's built for. Designing for real audiences will lead your students to have a deeper engagement because there's purpose behind it. They have a real person they're building for. It's not this hypothetical person that they're trying to do and build for. It's for either their class, or maybe what you can even do is how can they teach whatever content they're doing and make the game accessible to grades below them. So who are they designing for? Who will play the games? Because ultimately games need to be played. When it comes to these games, what kind of connections will be made? Will it be to create a better connection between home and school? Will it be a way for them to create a connection with their peers? Is there a way that the game can be played at the local library or some community center that is accessible to everybody? So who will be playing this game and where will it be played? I could see a scenario where you create board games for your local community center to play, to learn about the history of the place where you live. That would be a fantastic way to deliver that information. And then what's the challenge that the audience will tackle throughout the game? And how is it connected to the audience's experience, values, or goals? So like that example that I just gave moments ago about helping to understand the history of where they are from allows you to build a game that will connect with the audience with where they live. Now that's just one example. I'm sure that you have others that are coming to your mind as I'm even talking about this, of ways that the game will be able to challenge the audience that it is built for. And then the last part, and if you haven't figured it out yet, is the assessment part. Now the beauty of this is there's no test needed to give because the assessment is the game that they create, the game themselves. Does it meet their objectives? Does it meet their goals? Now there's a QR code. I'm going to post the link in the show notes for Rubrics for Rubrics to help you when it comes to game design. It connects to PBL Works, which is formerly the Buck Institute, and it helps you create a rubric that would be able to deliver and assess the students on what they are doing. Now, when it comes to game design, I think one of the important things that even getting students to do that you really need to focus on is the idea of iteration, is that it's not a build once and done. You got to try it out, see what aspects of the game worked well, what could be improved. Did the students learn anything? If I were a student playing this game and never before using it, what did I learn from it? And this goes back to that idea of authentic audience. In the book, Leaders of Their Own Learning, they describe the impact of broader audiences over student sense of pride and accomplishment and how this leads to implementation in both local and global communities. The author's hierarchy of audience, which is a model that they show on page 52 here, shows what it is to consider empowering student game design. The model suggests that student-designed games build for an authentic and global audience that will lead to increased motivation and engagement. And we're always looking for increased motivation and engagement in our classrooms. And allowing them to design the game is one way that helps move up this hierarchy that they have here. At the bottom, it says to present to a teacher to fulfill a requirement. Sure, that's something that is important, but that's not going to be a good motivating factor for students. At the very top of the hierarchy, it's to be a service in the world, which I think when you get up there, you're creating for a higher purpose, and that higher purpose will lead your students to engage deeper, but also think about throughout their iterations, what are ways we can improve so that we can be of service to the world, where we can reach our audience around us. So just like we talked about Jacob at the beginning of this episode, near the end of the book of this section, I should say, not the end of the book, but end of level four here, we meet a new game master, Christina Bustamante. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. If you do end up listening, and I did not, I do apologize. Christina is a STEM coach. Sorry, not STEM, STEAM coach, and was once asked, why do you incorporate games into your learning experiences? And Christina said, games are another way to level the playing field, allowing all of our students to access and engage in content. People play games for different reasons, ranging from social aspects to individual accomplishment. If you develop games so that all of these aspects are present, you'll tap into the key motivations that engage players. Games are a natural outlet for differentiation. Though gaming, the learning design becomes more universal. What she's really getting at there is that games are for everybody. And everybody likes playing games, and everybody can learn and grow from the games that they are playing. And so when Christina thinks about how to incorporate game design and students becoming the game master, questions that she'll ask herself is, and the students, what do games entail? What makes games fun? What elements need to be included so people will want to play the game? What is the goal or end result of the game? What will players get out of the game, and how will they win? I don't know about you, but I've gone up and down the Walmart shopping aisles before, and the game aisle is humongous, and there are hundreds of board games in there. And then a few aisles over is the video games, and there's hundreds there too. So what needs to be included to get someone to pick that game up off the shelf and play it? That's really what she's asking our students. And so I think it's a great question to think about and to help work with students. And I think the other really key thing, and there are some show notes that I will add in from Christina here, some links. But one of the things that I really found powerful in the section is this idea of avoid cognitive overload. If the students are new to the tool or game design in general, start with review content. Don't introduce new content alongside a new tool or strategy, as it will overload the students. You and I both know that anytime we're trying to teach a new concept, when we add things that are also new, we can't really get into it, and kids and students will become distracted. Christina also likes the Choose Your Own Adventure games, which are fun. And this section of the book also has a secondary set of game masters, Bill Marsland and Andrew Rothman, who are computer science specialists, CS for creative game design. And so in their section, they kind of talk about the idea on how any number of things are computer science, animation, music, art, storytelling, and you guessed it, games. One of the things that Bill is quoted in the book, there's a misconception that computer science is something that is rigid. Here's a program, copy my code, you're done. We now have tools that allow us to teach computer science in such a creative way that we're able to give students agency and choice, creating things that are meaningful to them. And so the idea is that there are lots of ways to be able to reach students and have students grow in their learning and engagement. One of the things that in their section of the Game Masters points out is they have three different types of assignments that students can do. And they talk about the kind of impact those assignments can have. There's, at the very basic beginning level, essentially students write a paper. It gets read, it gets graded, and it gets returned. That's a very low impact type of assignment. The next, and the medium level, so like not quite just writing a paper and being graded, but something more, is where students have to do some sort of presentation, whether that's creating a slide deck or reciting a passage or creating a diorama, and they present it to an audience, and that audience is not really interacting with it. They're just watching, observing, maybe asking questions afterwards. Those are the kind that have medium impact. So there's a little bit more growth in there for the students on the impact side, but it still is not something that is fully interactive. And then the last one is creating a game that people can play that deepen the impact of learning. And so that helps the student by becoming knowledge experts. It helps the community members who are played, and that community can be another classroom, it could be another school, it could be at a community center itself. And by community members engaging in it, they also learn too. Those are the high impact ones. Those are the ones that students are going to take the most away from. So there's a lot of resources available. I'm going to put links to all of them in the show notes. And ultimately, when it comes back to this idea of game design, it's made for everybody. Everybody plays games. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter how old you are. You can play games. And that's kind of the idea of this section, is that gaming is for everybody and making games is also for everybody. So the last thing, as I always like to wrap up with, are what are the ISTE standards for this level here, level 4? And so for the facilitator, for the educators, it's standard 6, facilitator. Foster a culture where students take ownership of their learning goals, outcomes in both independent and group settings. Create opportunities that challenge students to improve their design. So that's where that iteration part comes in. And for students, there's actually an ISTE standard for them too. It's standard 6, creative communicator. I think that one's pretty clear in what it's called. You're creating ways for students to communicate their growth and their knowledge. And 6D is one of the indicators. It's publish or present content that customizes the message and medium for the intended audience. Building a game for a realistic, real-life audience. And that's what they're talking about here in level 4, their turn, students as game masters. I know with this section, that's a lot of heady stuff, especially when you start to give up more control of your classroom to your students and you become more of a guide. But it's something that, if you can get there, is going to be incredibly beneficial to your students. For the next episode, we're going to talk about level 5, who's winning, power up your assessment and feedback. So what does assessment and feedback look like and how you can do it in your classroom? And then after that, we've only got a couple more levels and then we're done, people. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you like what we're doing here and you don't mind the cold that I have going on, which is definitely affecting my voice, I encourage you to leave us a 5-star review. Those kind of help us climb up the charts, especially in the Apple sphere of things. Make sure that if you know that this could be useful for another person, make sure that you share it. Use the share button, whatever platform that you happen to listen to the podcast. I'm Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy, and this is the SBS Digital Learning Hour.